text line, people asking 4752 and some others, are you going to do the local show the day that you host for Rush? Yeah, I get a 3-hour break. It's easy peasy. You know, because when I host, get to fill in for Dory, which is also a thrill. 22 years in this market, I get to fill in for Dory. We do the shows back to back. This time I get a 3-hour break. So, yeah, we'll be doing the local show as well. And by the way, some of the things we're going to air on the local show, we're starting to dig back into the archives a little bit because there were some things, some victories we've had and some things I warned you about that I want to share Thursday and Friday because we'll get new audience that tunes in. I want them to hear the fullness of what's going on here. And you remember some of the stuff like the heroin judge. Remember those audio clips? A lot of that. Mike Lindblom, we've had on the show, love to have Mike back. No idea his politics at all, but I know he's a great, great investigative reporter. He put together a piece on how the Department of Transportation got to spending $12 million per mile for a bicycle track, a bicycle lane. At present rates, he writes, the Seattle Department of Transportation says it might be able to afford only half the 50 miles of bike lanes promised in the Move Seattle levy approved by voters in 2015. That's a $968 million tax. And they're telling you, yeah, we're all probably only be able to afford 50% of that. I always like to cast this in real world light. You go to Dick's, have a double whammy, fries and a shake. You get your whammy, and you get half a shake, you get half the fries, you get half the burger. No top to the burger. Hey,
Yeah, we're only able to provide 50% of what you bought. We had some cost overruns, and just some things went wrong in the kitchen, so. There you go. That's bye. See ya.
Put this in real world light. You're done. You try this with the courts.
I'm going to pay 50% of the speeding ticket. I've run into some cost overruns. I didn't see impossible to see in ahead of the time.
The costs associated with these monstrosities are linked to the arrogance and the thugocracy that is the bike lobby here. The bike lobby that wants to shut down Salmon Bay Gravel, that wants to destroy the industrial businesses in Ballard, that wants to destroy the fishing businesses because they want high-rise condos and mixed-use buildings all around Seattle so they can pedal their bicycles at length. They're tied up with the development lobby that those there's no government like big government. The cost, Mike Lindblom digs into. Direct cost to install 7th Avenue's 6-foot-wide asphalt path, including bike-shaped icons and signals over 4.5 blocks, consumed $3.8 million. We installed a 6.5 block concrete driveway into our neighbor's land for a couple grand. Well, you got your sidewalk posts at $209,950. You got your traffic detours, flaggers, and police at nearly $300,000. You got your new curbs, corner ramps at $150,000. You got your new concrete street at $86,000. You got your subsurface filled deck at on nearly $200,000, $179,000. You got your black asphalt $75,000. You got your green bike strips and white icons at $30,000, bicycle signals at $30,000, sidewalks at $190,000, stormwater drains and pipes at $162,000. You got your new streetlights at $374,000. You got your city overhead design surveying staff time at $1.1 million for bicycles. Now, Granted, I see a lot of bicyclists on Eastlake. Do I see 3.8 million per 4.5 blocks worth of bicyclists? In the same breath, in the same city, here's some comparisons. The average for U.S. bicycle lanes is $133,000 bucks per mile. And a high of $568,000 per mile. What are we in Seattle? $12 million per mile. But I don't want you to worry. These are the people who can solve homelessness. These are the people to trust with $75 million per year. Oh, by the way, in the study, some of the things they're doing, you will love this. SDOT is hiring management coaches. Management coaches. Do you remember when Pete Rogoff, the so-called CEO of Sound Transit, got to charge you to go to a CEO camp to learn how to be a CEO and to have a management coach? Because remember when Pete Rogoff was going around and giving speeches saying,
remember that black people need extra help in the office? So if you're white, be sure to help your black colleague do things like find the copier and remember to put the paper in the right way.
Things like that. So he had to go to CEO school. You're spending money to send leaders, so-called, of the city to leader school. Oh, that's not enough. You need more? King County Metro is saying it may not have enough coin to be able to bring buses to all the areas in the metro and all the areas in the city. But what's their focus? This drives me nuts. This drives me completely batty.
We're going to be sending a lot of hipsters hiking.
This is like my second time. Yeah, and it's like fun because like it provides you the easy transit to direct to the trails.
So. County and city leaders launched the second Trailhead Direct route this weekend, offering service from Capitol Hill to Mount Si and Mount Tenerife.
We know there's demand out there.
Christina O'Claire with King County Metro says the expanded routes will help not only to ease congestion, but help those who don't have a car to get out and enjoy nature.
We know there's people out there today that can't get out of the cities. They can't afford to get out of the cities. They don't have.
That's not who this is aimed at, you clown! It's not aimed at the people who can't afford to get out of the cities. It's aimed at hipsters who can rent a bloomin' BMW for 20 bucks a day. And you are under federal investigation. You guys are, there's two federal investigations hanging over your head because you have left developmentally disabled people standing on the street corners in gang-ridden, drug-ridden Seattle at midnight wondering how they're going to get home because the buses didn't come, but you're taking hipsters hiking. This is the King County that's going to handle the heroin problem. This is the King County that in 10 years spent $1 billion on heroin. This is the King County that you can't get a Republican elected count or to the executive seat? Good Lord. Good Lord. Let's continue to break holes in the wall of stupid. All right, we'll come back on the Todd Herman Show. Stephen Hayward, I read him a lot at Powerline Blog. He's come across an Oval Office memo about the Oval Office you need to hear. Now, you need to hear all of it. Some of it's going to be painful, but trust me, you need to hear all of this because context is extremely important. You're going to be disturbed by what you hear. You really are. But I want you to stick with it, and you'll see why. When we come back on the Todd Herman Show... to the text line, we'll get into this segment of this thing. This Stephen Hayward's obtained a White House memo about life in the White House. You're not going to like it, but it's important that you listen to the whole thing. Trust me in that, please, okay? Text line 6062. Make sure you warn the nation about Sleepy Jay when you're on for Rush. The country doesn't seem to know him like we do. JJ and Bure. I will. In fact, since Sleepy Jay thinks he's going to be president, traveling to Iowa and all, I'll make sure
we have to We have the best weed. The arc of history is an arc.
See the CBJ voice.
The arc of history is an arc. That it's bent like an arc, and it's long and bent, and it bends in the general direction of bending towards safety and equality, and we have the best weed.
Also, the text line at 800-465-8770, brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. By the way, that is also the phone line. Phones are open, 800-465-8770. This is off topic, but it's incredibly important. Instead of Yanni or Laurel, I heard Paul is dead. It's good information to have. All right, I've stalled long enough. Here's the memo. Stephen Hayward writing at Powerline blog. As it happens, I've come into possession of a forthcoming memoir, heretofore unseen by the public, by a close insider to Trump who has left the inner circle. It's sure to make a splash when it is published. Here are a few key excerpts that bear out the charges. You got to hear this all. Trust me, okay? His knowledge of political and constitutional history and theory is distinctly limited. During all the time I associated with him, I never knew him to read a serious book. In the years of my association with him, he has never evidenced any appreciation of the basic philosophical distinctions in the history of American political thought. Perhaps that is why Trump never developed the easy command of language which characterized so many who preceded him in the presidency. Nevertheless, he's taken a keen sense of language and is shown in the magnificent manner in which he delivers a written speech. He is intensely loyal to the people in his official family. At no time does he seem to doubt that the tried and true leaders of his party would supinely do his bidding. He has a genuine horror of discharging an incompetent subordinate. This reluctance to make clear-cut personnel decisions is the source of some of the indescribable confusion that mar Trump's administration of the presidency. Often, he would not remove a person who was not doing the work assigned to him, but would appoint another person with a new title such as coordinator. Thus, two people would be doing the job which should have been assigned to one. Day after day, there's a subtle flattery from those who come to ask favors to win the ingratiating smile. The endless streams of those who have appointments do not use the time to purvey unpleasant truths. And if a man is told hour after hour and day after day how right he is, he will, unless he has an extraordinary defense, come to believe that he can never be wrong. There was, for one thing, Trump's spirited disdain of most of the political rules that usually govern things. He considered himself under no direct obligation to man so far as cabinet appointments were concerned. Neither recognized party leadership nor active campaign support figured heavily in his calculations. Disloyalty is suspected everywhere by the White House. Never until the moment I heard Trump deliver the speech on that January night did I realize to the extent to which verbal excesses can intoxicate not only those who hear them, but those who speak them. Thoughtful citizens were stunned by the violence, the bombast, the naked demagoguery of these sentences. No one who has merely read them can half know the meaning conveyed by the cadences of that voice that uttered them. So, soak that into your psyche, and then hear this from Hayward. Wait, did I say this is about President Trump? Oh, I'm sorry, I got confused. These are the assessments of Franklin Roosevelt from one of his top aides, Raymond Malloy, who became disaffected with FDR and the New Deal as it lurched to the left in FDR's second term. These are drawn from Mollie's two splendid but overlooked memoirs of FDR and the New Deal after 7 years and the first New Deal. Now, there are some resemblances to the president in this. Let us be honest. But the context here of the Democrats who love the New Deal programs, they don't speak this way of Roosevelt now. Roosevelt, and if you've not read about him, there's lots to read and lots to learn about Roosevelt, and some of it extremely ugly. A lot of it extremely ugly. But the context here into which the media has cast this presidency is that every act is unprecedented. Let us remind ourselves that it was Democrats who shut down radio stations. It was Democrats who packed the Supreme Court. Those were tactical measures undertaken that any objective comparison shows to be unprecedented. They were not words. They were not denials. They were forward action. The great trick of the media is not just that we must all panic, not just that everything is tainted. It is that nothing is historically contextual. That's one of the great tricks. It was the same trick in reverse during the Obama administration. The same trick in reverse. Nothing he did was unprecedented when he moved populations of people from one state, Iowa, to another state, Illinois, by leveraging federal dollars. That was unprecedented. Never been done. Well, unless you count moving Native Americans from reservation to reservation or slaves from slave home to slave home. Moving people because he liked them there, not here. Tactically unprecedented, unless connected to two of the most terrible aspects of our history, unreported by the media, and yet a tweet misspelled or a speech off the cuff, unprecedented and panic-inducing. I will come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. I don't know what's going on with Rudy Giuliani, but he had better just easily and slowly back away from any TV screen, and I hope his counsel's not being taken seriously by the president. Rudy is suggesting that the president sit down with Mueller. That cannot happen. It absolutely cannot happen because of what Mueller will do in that room. Now there's talk of making it live or of doing this to speed the investigation. Mueller's tossed that out there. I can be done in September if you sit with me. September. Lee, is that right before the election? Is that when that is? Oh, that's a sneaky old piece of bump music. Ah. Producer Tom didn't think I'd catch him. Reverting to the database. Look at the look on his face. Tom got caught.
It's a good song.
It is a good song, but it's a sleepy old bump music. We don't use sleepy old bump music. Okay? We freshen that up. I am chastising the producer. My apologies to everybody for playing sleepy old bump music. Text line 7592. Jay Inslee, the only governor in the U.S. history to have his speeches written completely in pictograms. He has trouble with those, too, because he's got to have a staff member point out which pictogram goes first.
Is it left to right? March is left to right? We got the best weed.
Rudy Giuliani has a terrible idea. Bobby Mueller with the FBI has said to the president and the team, hey, come in and sit with me and have us a chit-chat. I will be able to wrap up my investigation by September. End of. 30 days before the election, the midterms. Rudy Giuliani is entertaining this.
In a phone conversation this afternoon, Rudy Giuliani telling our chief White House correspondent John Roberts that 2 weeks ago, Mr. Giuliani had a conversation with special counsel Robert Mueller about an end date to his investigation.
Yeah, former Mayor Giuliani saying that he told Mr. Mueller that an interview with the president would be contingent on there being an end date to the probe. He says that Mueller told him that if he's able to interview the president by mid-July, he should be able to wrap up the investigation by September 1st. Mayor Giuliani also says he wants the investigation wrapped up by that date. We're told in order to clear the decks for the midterm election, so it appears to be, according to former Mayor Rudy Giuliani, who's serving as one of the lawyers for President Trump, that there could be an end date September 1st for the investigation.
So it's Fox News. This cannot happen. Mueller, you have to picture this scene. The best of all demands that Rudy made is a Hillary treatment. We want a limited time. We are not going to be under oath. You're not going to record the session. You're going to write your report in advance. Let us read it. Okay, and we're going to have Melania go get on a plane with Jeff Sessions, who will be monitoring this. Of course, Sessions has recused himself. So, well, you know, Sessions can unrecuse, sit on an airplane, have a private conversation on somebody's private jet to discuss this, the Hillary treatment. That's exactly what they should stick to. That this is being entertained. Understand this. This is the way this will work. Mueller will have with him stacks and stacks of paper. They'll be filed and organized. He will have a laptop in front of him or an iPad or something of that sort. He will have been rehearsed for 2 to 3 weeks prior to this. He will have dates and times and people in rooms. He'll have recorded phone calls. He will have logs of phone calls. He will have text messages. He will have conversations with Cohen. He will have conversations with Manafort. He will have all of that. And there's no way Mueller, who is doing this as part of an effort to not embarrass the FBI, to take focus off the fact that the FBI sent one informant, now we hear from the Daily Caller's Chuck Ross, maybe two informants into the Trump campaign. They'll have that information from those informants. They'll have those reports as well. Mueller sits down with all those facts, and he will put together a question list. The question list will be to get one thing, in my judgment, not information. Nothing they ask the president will be about learning anything. Nothing. What they ask the president will be about getting indictable information. They will be asking things in the following way. One, they know that the president is at the heart a gifted salesperson, a gifted presenter who has spent his life selling the big deal. That's how the president has built his real estate properties, is selling the big deal. They will structure questions that will give the president a platform to make a statement like, my inauguration crowd was the biggest in history. I promise you they will set up questions like that. Who funded the inauguration? Was Russian money involved in the inauguration? They'll know all the answers. That inauguration day, how many people were in your circle? How many? They will structure that in hopes that the president says, well, you know, we had the biggest inauguration crowd in history. That's a lie. Okay, boom, you lied to the FBI. That's lie number one. They will take dates and times, and I guarantee Mueller's the sort of guy to take a West Coast time. That meeting happened in Seattle. What time was that? Okay, they communicate at an East Coast time. Well, I made the call at 9 o'clock. Oh, did I say that was in Seattle? That would have been 6 o'clock. You lied. They can take a series of those and go back to their office, take all those questions that they asked, all the president's answers. You know that they're going to demand that the president do this on tape, not like Hillary. Hillary wasn't taped. She wasn't recorded at all. No video, no audio. They're going to demand that the president is taped. They go back and they take every single answer, word by word. Well, I joined Melania in the room. Oh, wait a minute. We've got three witnesses that say Melania came in. The third person in the room, the president was already there. He said he joined Melania in the room. She wasn't in the room. She came later. That's a lie. The president said, my car arrived at this time. Well, that's not his car. No. That car belongs to the people. That's the president's car. Or that was a rental car. That's not his car. And they take those series of lies that are not lies. And if the president does happen to lie, well, that's even worse. They lay those out on a whiteboard, or maybe they use software at this point, and then they begin to go through this, and here's what happens. Now the media reports. The Mueller's team would like the president to clarify some of the things that he told investigators. They'd like a chance to re-interview the president because there are some inconsistencies in what he told the FBI. Which inconsistencies? Well, Team Trump won't know how deep they went into calling things inconsistencies, not his car. So they do things like this. They set up a question. Let's say that it's the thing of Melania being in the room, that the president said, I joined Melania in the room, when in fact Melania joined him. Okay. They take a question like this. Mr. President, you said that on October 12th, there was a meeting in Trump Tower wherein you joined Melania in the room. You had a conversation with these people. These topics were covered. That meeting wrapped up in about 45 minutes. Is that correct? Is anything you need to change about that? Anything you want to add, an addendum, anything you need to clear up? The president says, no, that's how it happened. Check. A consistent pattern of lying or of deceiving. Now, in the president's recollection, he's saying, I joined Melania in the room. I thought she was there first. When the FBI wants to turn something into a lie, they build out now a series of deceptions, and then they go for the re-interview. And in those re-interviews, if they go through and reconfirm these deceptions, they have different agents sit in the room. Wow, he said the same thing to me. Wow, this is very deceptive. Wow, I found a deceptive statement in every answer to every question that we gave the president. We need to dig in a lot more. This re-interview is not enough. We need some more documentation. Now, I believe that Mueller intends to come out of this case with obstruction of justice charges. One of the ways you obstruct justice is you lie to the FBI. That can be turned into obstructing an investigation. That can be obstruction of justice. Now, you've heard Mueller say he can't indict the president, right? And constitutionally, he cannot indict the president. That's not his role. His role is to produce evidence given to the Democrats to run on impeaching the president. Now the ads come out. In, say, 35 questions, the president lied 77 times. That's the danger. He can't sit for this interview in writing and limited time. That's my favorite time of the show. Your letters, emails, and social media posts, longer form communication with the show. I got to tell you, the officer who wrote us explaining that he is that he is under orders, basically, from the city of Seattle to ignore crimes. He has generated so much response. I've got officers who have written in to say, look, that's true. Our careers are at risk, but we also need to be able to put a little bit of skin in the game. We need to be able to push back on the city. It's our job to enforce the laws. There's disagreement on this. And we talked earlier in the show about the fact a lot of cops are stepping out of the city of Seattle. So I could read letter after letter after letter on this. But let me just read one or two. I'll do them from both sides. Tina writes, Dear Todd, I heard the email from the officer explaining that it's the civilian authorities who have tied their hands. Here's my question to the brave men and women who serve the city as police officers. Why don't you guys speak up? I know what's going on. I know you've been told to ignore property crime. I've had officers take reports at my home, and I've asked them, is anything going to get done? And they've told me, no, ma'am, nothing's going to get done. You're best off just keeping your car opened. Don't keep anything valuable in your car ever. Don't lock it because you're going to save money by people not breaking in the windows. No, this is not going to stop, and you should take it up with the mayor. But for the officers and the brave people who serve, be brave. If all of you spoke out, or if 20 of you spoke out and said, here's what's going on in our city, you could move mountains because even in insane Seattle, we still respect our police officers. And I want to tell all the cops, we really do love you. We're sorry that you're being put in this hard position by city leadership. Tina, thanks for the note. Leadership, Tina, you know better than that. These are not leaders. The city doesn't have any leaders at all, right? At least in the city council. This is from the other's perspective. It's from Stephen. Mr. Herman, I deeply disagree with the note from the police officer that you read blaming city authorities for an inability to enforce the law. He, I presume it's a he, took an oath to uphold the law, to fight crime. When he sees it, he needs to be making arrests. Every cop in Seattle needs to arrest people who are shooting up drugs, who are selling drugs, who are illegally parking RVs, refusing to move, and who are trespassing. Let me ask you this, Mr. Herman. If they decided to go make those arrests and were taking those people to jail, who's going to win the argument? The city council or them? The city attorney or them? You know, and I know, and it's absolutely clear that in Seattle, as communist as this city has become, the citizens are still going to back the cops. They should make the arrests anyway. Stephen. Hey, Stephen, I get where you're coming from. And I look, I'm torn on this because the cop who wrote to us, he described himself as being 3 years from retirement. And they can make his life hell. They can make his life hell by changing his shifts, by putting him on, you know, nights or putting him on a desk job. 3 years from retirement. But I also see the point because even our Hall of Fame emailers like Jay Payne really took the officers to task. I would say this to the cops. You do need to speak up. You need to get to your union. You guys need to organize. Now, I know you don't speak out against the city authorities, but your guys' lives are being put at risk. I met a cop with one of the local agencies. I was buying my daughter a protein shake, and he and I struck up a conversation in Burien. He doesn't work in Burien. He works in a different area. That man had been stabbed by a needle, and hepatitis-infected needle by a junkie he was trying to take down. This situation is going to, and it's already got you guys stabbed. It's already got you guys cut up. And you're going to have to speak up because the voters will back you. If the police department, if 10% of the police department spoke up against what the city's doing, you guys, in fact, could move mountains. So why don't you? Why don't you guys put on a press conference and say, why are you doing this to us? Why are we not allowed to go enforce these laws? We know what's going on in these neighborhoods. I know it sounds political, and isn't that Sean Whitcomb's job? It's, you know what? Guys, ladies, you wear the badge. You're brave enough to do that. Clearly, we're not. You go do that. You go speak out. Come here. I'll tell your story for you. Lastly, from Laura, a new listener to the Todd Herman Show. Dear Todd, I first heard about you on social media. My aunt is from the west side of Washington State and posted an article you'd written on one of your websites. I read it and thought, hey, this is a guy who understands that mockery is the way to beat the communists in Seattle. It's where you described Shama Sawant as the Bhagwan Shri Sawant. I'm only 22 years old. I hadn't heard of the Bhagwan Shri Rajneesh. And then I did the research and found the Netflix series on this guy. You couldn't be more right. Your Bhagwan Shri Sawant, as you've named her, is doing the same thing to your city. She's importing street people as not just thugs, but as voters. I cannot believe people in Seattle are not smart enough to see this. So I've become a listener to the show. I was shocked to hear you end your program with the thing that you do where you kind of talk about yourself. I think you call it on a personal note. You care about people. I thought I was just going to hear mocking. I'm really thrilled to finally find the conservative radio show I can share with my younger female friends who are conservative but would like to have a little bit of compassion thrown in as well. A new listener from Pullman, Washington, Laura. Laura, my dad was a kook. Now, he went to undergraduate school at WSU. That's where he got his undergrad. Got his graduate degree at the UW, but he never stopped loving the Cougs. The rest of my family, they're all Cougs. So it is great to hear from a Coug. In fact, Tom, the producer of the show, we're still working on a nickname for Tom. Tom, the producer, is a proud Coug. A Coug. Go Cougs. Thanks, Laura. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show, get into more Seattle spirit on AM 770 KTTH and on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM.